say, how do you think I know? She got a 12-inch Bowie and a cold steel 44. Here come that guy, Susan. Lord, how do you think I know? She got a 12-inch Bowie and a cold steel 44. I'm going down to the station when her train is due, 'cause my black-eyed Susie, Lord, she coming on through. Down to the station, Lord, when the train is due. She long and lean. She's the finest woman that I ever have seen. Black-eyed Susie, Lord, she is so long and lean. She's a fucking mare. She make a grown man cry and a preacher swear. When she rides in the saddle, Lord, she is a fucking mare. She make a grown man cry, Lord, she make a preacher swear. How do you think I know? She got a 12-inch boy and a cold steel 44. Here come black-eyed Susie, Lord, how do you think I know? She got a 12-inch boy and a cold steel 44.
Welcome to Big Blend Radio with Nancy and Lisa. You just heard Black Eyed Susie from A Satchel Full of Blues. It's the latest and ninth album by a San Francisco Bay Area roots music man, Blind Lemon Pledge. We call him James Byfield. James is back on the show. He comes on every year, well, sometimes twice a year. He's been busy with his new albums, and you can keep up with him at blindlemon-pledge.com. But welcome back, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing real well. Good to talk to you guys again after this tumultuous year.
I know. Mm-hmm. The tumultuous is not going away. I think we need more blues, and I think this album has a lighter feel, and it gets dark. There's some dark stuff in there. There's some darker songs, but I feel like it's kind of like it's an album of release, like a blues release. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think the blues, I mean, that's why I like the blues. Even the dark stuff's got relief to it. You know, I mean, it's, you get your emotions in there and get it out of yourself.
Mm. Yeah. The blues will never die, right? I think that's one of those genres that just kind of, well, we can never let it, you know, go.
Well, it's also so built into so much of American music that, you know, there's no way it's going to die. It just goes through changes.
So you've put up all the songs on YouTube, and everyone, it's under James Byfield when you go there, B-Y-F-I-E-L-D, Byfield. So that means you have a field in your family, right? Byfield, the last name?
Yeah, supposedly it meant my family back in England lived by a field, so.
Seriously?
Oh, how cool.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's,
That's a great way to get a name.
On a show with Glenn from Norfolk in England.
Yeah.
Who checks out everyone's DNA and does like their history in England. We'll have to check it out because a lot of those airfields or fields turned out to be airfields for World War II and stuff. So you never know.
Yeah, you never know. Well, one time I took a trip to Jamaica, or I went there several times, but the first time I went, there's a Byfield Highway there that we actually rolled down. So that was kind of cool.
Okay, so what we learned today, because everyone, we try to do this through Zoom and video and things weren't working, but we did get to have a sneak peek into your home. So I'm going to just tell people this, like James has a lot of plants. We didn't see those plants, but we saw a lot of plants, but indoor house plants, regular, good, clean house plants, and then some masks. So you collect masks, which is something we didn't know about. Tell me what started this, because I feel like that's part of this. It's an ancient thing in cultures, I mean, around the world. What got you started in that?
Somehow, and we've been collecting for a long time. My wife and I both are into the collection. And I don't remember what our first mask we got was or how it started, but we just kept being drawn to masks and finding these great ones, both on our travels and in flea markets and stuff. And we kind of set our own criteria for it, that it just had to speak to us, you know. And so we looked for a certain kind of feel and stuff, and we've ended up with masks from around the world, both, as I say, from places we visited, and then in flea markets you often find an African mask or a Thai mask or something. I found a Chinese mask one time of this pig that was just great. So
wow.
Whenever we see one we like, we get them, although we now have a couple hundred.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Did you find any in Jamaica?
Pardon?
When you went to Jamaica, did you find any masks over there?
Yeah, you know, I think when we were in Jamaica was kind of before we were really getting into masks. But after we got into it, we still visited the Caribbean, and I found them in other places. So, although that's not a huge part, well, it is for carnival and stuff. In fact, we got one of the mesh masks that they wear on Barbados. It's made out of steel mesh and then painted over, and we got that after carnival. So.
I want to do a whole thing on masks now. Well, I know Artist Victoria Chick did a story. I'll have to send it to you. Artist Victoria Chick, she comes on and does art history, and she did a whole story. And I think it's in one of our digital magazines. I don't know if it's up on the website anymore, but it was one of, she did it about Halloween and why we get dressed up for Halloween and everything. Mm-hmm. And masks had to do some, you know, like you want to be something, but you're hidden. And there's a lot of there's so much to it about culture, and then really not being one, not wanting to be seen, but needing to be seen. You know what I mean?
Well, again, yeah. And I like the whole idea, and that's partly what I've done with my music is stepping into another identity. You know?
Yeah, Byfield, and then Blind Lemon Pledge. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because when I conceived the character, that was kind of the idea. I knew I wanted to start recording blues, but I thought of kind of creating a character that I could inhabit to do the music. So that's where Blind Lemon Pledge came from.
Who is that masked man? So listen, this album, it's awesome. We love it.
Oh, thank you.
Where can people get it? Like, I know everyone can go to your website again, Blind Lemon.
It's on Amazon and iTunes and all the major outlets.
Are you on Spotify?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Good. We started making playlists on Spotify now. So good.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So we can start adding, because we got to do ham and eggs, and you know, we love to play ham and eggs. Mm-hmm. So good thing. And a lot of your music, Nancy and I are in the Appalachian country now, so it's time to play your music everywhere we travel, because it goes with where we're at. And I think that's so cool about what your music is. But this album, I know the last one, Going Home, you had a few covers. This one, you only have one cover on there, Alberta, and I love that version. I love what you did with Alberta.
Thanks so much. Yeah. I've actually known that song since I was about 14 or 15, way back in the day, there was a group called the Chad Mitchell Trio that did the song. And I learned it from that. And then years later, I added it to my repertoire. And for some reason, I started playing it that way, slow, and I kind of worked out an arrangement. And one day I said, you know, I should go back and listen to what Chad Mitchell did just to see how much I veered from the original. I completely veered. It was interesting because they do it as kind of a shuffle blues, and I had my mind said a completely different thing. So that's
wow. This album kind of reminds me of almost like Canned Heat, but like the slow, like this, there's a lilt in it that just kind of like, I don't, you know, when someone's in between a situation or it's like that you're catching a song and an emotion in the in-between zone, like you're really upset or not, you know, but you're in that zone of coming out of it, but you still want to linger. It's lingering blues. Am I allowed? Like lingering blues.
I like that.
That's a good song title because it's
I was just going to say that's a great song title.
Yeah,
right there.
Because it's like the anger and how long are you going to harbor the anger?
Yeah, you have that feeling because you've got this, you're going, and then you're like, well, you know, I may kind of feel all right.
Yeah,
you've got that. And I don't know if that's a San Francisco thing. I was thinking about that today. I was like, because you're really good at this vibe of like the Appalachian areas and like, you know, Virginia and everything. And then I was like, you know, this one for me felt a little bit more San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, what does that mean? You know, that's just me. Everybody's got their own thing. To me, I don't want to like it.
It's like, it's got San Francisco is like ups and downs and trolleys and up the hill, down the hill.
Yeah, I was like, Nancy, this is your album because
I love San Francisco.
But this is her vibe of that kind of
just up and down and deal with it, you know?
I definitely set up the flow of it that way, so that there's a kind of a hot one and then a much more tame one. So you keep kind of rolling and rolling and rolling.
Yeah.
So.
And it's like, it's up to you to deal with it and like the city itself. And you either embrace it or you don't. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you better leave because you won't be happy. But I mean, it's a city is its own thing compared to going out into the wilderness, which also has its ups and downs, you know. It really does, depending on what you run into. So it's really up to people to deal with their own emotions and take on it. But San Francisco's a hoot, man.
But I think about also like the album where I say it kind of feels like San Francisco to me, like it just kind of has that vibe of the blues of when, you know, like here's Woodstock and then everybody going to the Bay Area becoming this hotbed, right? Mm-hmm. It has that feel of that time frame of let things go, but at the same time really stand up for like any, like it, A Satchel Full of Blues is like that to me. That I love the title of it because it's like,
me too.
It's like a collection, like your mask collection, right? So I'm glad we saw the mask. Well, a tiny, teeny portion of the mask collection, but it's kind of that where A Satchel Full of Blues is like, you know, you're carrying this luggage, right? And that's what San Francisco was like. People didn't, they brought all these sounds to the Bay Area and here was this amalgamation. Yeah. And that's what this album, I can't get away from that. That's for me personally. Like everyone's got their own opinion for and feel to what they listen to. But for me, it just kind of had this like, oh, this is what happened. And you're in the Bay Area and you wrote it during a pandemic. So I'm thinking, did your city have some influence on this?
Well, I've lived here so long, I can't help but have influence all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been here since I was 17, so it's a big part of me.
Do you ever see those Conyers, those parents that somebody let loose? We interviewed them years ago.
The
Conyers, the birds.
God, yes. They're wonderful. Yeah. They've spread, cool. In fact.
Yeah.
They're in other sections of the city.
Oh, yeah. We went up. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but his now wife yeah. filmed him, did a documentary yeah. on Netflix, and we're like, we're going to San Francisco. We need to go interview him. And we did.
And we did.
Oh, cool.
Up to the Coit Tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a home at that point, homeless.
Homeless,
and
yeah.
Feeding the birds. And, well, I mean, that's got a lot to do with the blues, but the birds had the blues, but he fed them, and they take care of him, and it's pretty cool. I mean, that's something that I think San Francisco is exactly what Nancy is bringing that up. It's like, here's everybody coming in, animals, birds, your port, your harbor, like, you know, a bay. Mm. And so here's this amalgamation. And that, again, your album had that. And I think that's what a satchel is. If you've lived a good life, you're going to have a satchel full of difference.
Yeah, because when you unpack the satchel and you get to the bottom, you're going to like, oh, I didn't know I brought this.
Yeah. What was under there? Okay, so that brings up the dark song.
Okay. The dark song.
Killed the king of the blues. Like, seriously.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
Okay, so when I want to know, like, when you're putting the album together, were you thinking of the album and getting concept-y with it? Or were you just, like, these songs were just coming out? Or, like...
Well, this album, as many of mine are, where I do original songs, I both write kind of in the time that I'm putting the album together or just before, and I also bring... use songs that I've either never recorded or sometimes re-record. And this one I've in fact, this is the third time I've tried on this one. And what I like about re-recording, I mean, I kind of got that from Muddy Waters, because Muddy Waters used to re-record the same songs several times at different times in his life. And you kind of get, oh, well now you're, you know, 10 years later, what's your interpretation or how do you feel about the song now?
Yeah.
And so I had never been really happy with the recordings I'd gotten on it. And so I decided to bring it into this album. But what I did was I shortened the bridge considerably, and I completely changed the kind of feel of it. It hadn't been a slide song before. So I got my slide out, and that changed the way the beat, and suddenly the whole thing kind of fell together in a brand new way. And I love that kind of thing. I like to see songs like change and live and go through, you know, grow up and do different things.
Yeah, I think that's cool, because then it appeals to different generations, and you never know how long or how far that's going to go.
Well, yeah,
you know, into the future, and how people are going to listen to it and respond to it. I think it's cool.
Yeah. And if Beale Street was a woman, I recognize that one.
Oh, yeah. That was off my jazz album.
Yeah.
Again, another one. Well, and as you recall, my friend Marisa sang it on the jazz album. Mm. I thought, you know, I thought the interesting thing about the way records are promoted, as I probably know, the jazz one went to more of a specific jazz audience.
Mm,
So the acoustic blues audience hadn't ever really heard that song. So I said, well, you know, it's worth playing, you know, worth putting it on the album for that. And so what I did was I went back to the original arrangement I had for it, which was very dark and bluesy. And because we had rearranged it for the jazz album. So we turned it into kind of a, almost New Orleans kind of thing on the jazz album, but then I took it back to its more rootsy sound for this.
Wow, I love that. That's
love
like
it.
Just cooking with a different spice.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same dish, but you're cooking it with a different spice.
Well,
I like it.
You make me feel better too about some of my songwriting is just like, I have this one song that was recorded away from what the original was, but how I wrote it, because we had like one take. And
yeah.
Everybody had to be able to like, here, three chord blues, like let's just turn
That's it
into it. That. And I've been doing a lot with the drummer I played with was Willie Kellogg from, he played with Moby Grape and Flying Burrito Brothers at the time. And no, I kind of retired from that. He was like in between with them. And he was like, no, you got to do this and that. And we used to play Murder My Heart for the Judge.
Oh yeah,
the judge. Oh yeah, don't he wouldn't budge. I got murder. And he was like, he's like, you got to calm down on that song. I'm like, no, I can't. He's like, you got to
never
chill.
Calm down.
I can't. He's like, you got to bring it back. That's not how Moby Grape did it. I'm like, well, this is mine. I'm pissed. I don't know why. It wasn't me. But anyway, so Prozac Jane is a song I wrote, and kind of it turned into like not that, but because we were, and whenever we did gigs, it was like the quickest way to get people to do this song. But the song is so not that. It's like one song is complete opposites. Like complete opposites. Like one is more prog rock actually, and one is like complete blues. And both, I like both. But to do the other side, it's like I need help, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So but I feel like it's very interesting about songs, how you can change them in that way, but still have the same feel. You know, you still have that, there's the same message.
It's kind of what I do with covers too. You know, I don't do any cover that I can't find my own self in. You know, if I end up just sounding like somebody I've already heard before, it's not, interesting to me. I like to take a song like the last album, which was mostly covers, and, you know, find where my own particular voice and style and everything fits into it. So that's really important to me.
Do you listen to other people doing the covers? I just have to ask because, you know, it's interesting when
I'm adding a new song to the repertoire, I'll go and I'll listen, you know, if it's by some famous original guy, like say I've added a couple of J.J. Cale songs to my repertoire.
Oh, I
over
love
years.
J.J., man.
And so I always go and listen to his version of it and then kind of take off from there, you know, go where I want
to
go.
But would you listen to like Clapton? Like if Clapton, you know, because he basically took J.J. Cale's repertoire. Sorry.
No,
but anyway, but now, you know, like, I just did that for Nancy. But J.J. No. Cale, like, J.J. Cale, to me, is one of the best writers out there, right? And just
I love it. I mean,
damn.
He's so sparse.
Yeah, right. He's got this rhythm. He's like the driving rhythm. But then, you know, here comes Clapton, takes his tunes, not in a bad way, but now, like, it's just two different songs. Now, would you listen to Clapton's version before you recorded it and covered it?
I probably would, you know, just as kind of research.
Okay.
But I'm sure knowing me, I would like the J.J. Cale version better.
Okay, you and Nancy are on the same tribe then.
I can't do it. I'm not going to say anything.
No, but J.J. Cale, you know what J.J. Cale had, and you do this too in your music, is you allow this breathability and space to actually lean in.
That's so true of my music. I mean, I'm very conscious of it because I just love that. I love to have air around and keep thinking, you know, let the listener fill in rather than fill with a million notes, you know.
But and that is what I love, is because then people feel one with you as you're playing. When it gets too complicated, it's like when I mean, I love classical music, but there are composers that are so complicated that you're like, what the hell are you doing? And you just can't get there with, you can't even sort out the melody. And it's not that they're bad musicians. It's just, that's not your cup of tea. Let me put it that way. So you have to hit the genre has to keep up with the times, but not go too far ahead that nobody knows what you're doing. It's like a simple, I always think about it as animals migrating. They have their certain paths. Sometimes they have to go off the path because of hunters and stuff like that. And then they go back, but they get there. Somehow they migrate every year. And it's like that. It can't be too fast and it can't be too slow. But it has to appeal to the rest of the herd, like the leader. Can't be, hey, I can run faster than the rest of you. And they're all like, well, go ahead. Bye-bye. Pick a new leader. It's like that to me. I don't know if that made any sense at all. But Let me try and put it another way. There's technical playing to show off your technique, and there's playing and with emotion.
I totally agree. Yeah. Many years ago, when I was a budding guitarist, I practiced and practiced so I could what they call shredding. You know, play a million notes at a million miles a minute.
Yeah.
And I got decent at it, although you had to practice a lot to get there. And one day I was playing in a jam session, and I just went like, "What am I doing? I'm just moving my fingers." You know, I didn't really have a melody or anything. And I changed from that day on. I went, okay, I'll go the other way. I'll just keep it sparse and, you know, is lots of space and lots of air. So this
you need the depth of emotion and feeling to connect with the audience.
But I think that's the beauty about blues, is it gets you to actually feel every part of the note. Like as it bends, you turn with it, you know. And
you bend.
You can listen to a song a gazillion times and it'll be different every time according to your feelings too, your emotion, your attitude at that time, you know. And so I think the blues is just one of those genres that, and Americana, I love it because you incorporate a lot of, you know, what's going on the outside of the blues. Like Americana is like, you got a little country, you got a little bit of this and that, but country has blues in it too.
I'm probably one of the more eclectic people doing stuff out there. And interestingly, for this album, in the past, and if you kind of review, like you love ham and eggs and stuff like that. In the past, I used to kind of do arrangements that were geared to the song. They were kind of like genre arrangements. So each on some of my albums, like the Evangeline album, every song has a kind of different orchestration to it. And then for this one, I decided, you know, based on my last album, which just had me and a bass player, I thought I'm going to cut it back so that the songs are what's eclectic and different. But the band is basically the same, just doing a different approach to each song. So that's what the sound of this one.
I really Black Eyed Susie to me. I really love it because I'm just more. I really love slide and like that, just, you know, swampy stuff. Mm-hmm. And where it's just like, yeah, this is how it's like the hound dog is calling, you know, it's singing. It, you know, we're in Tennessee right now. We're recording. By the time this airs, we'll be in North Carolina in on the Flat River. So, I mean, we're in this country right now, you know, and it's like, it feels really good. So can't wait. We're going to be listening to this as we travel. But, you know, there's road this, trip. I mean, this, the blues is international. You know, I feel like, you know, we learned a lot about Creole culture when we were in Louisiana and that Creole culture is worldwide. And I think that's the same with the blues. It's worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
It's how you feel and how you emote it. And, you know, it's always there. And you're doing this amazing work of like, here's just these different ways of hearing it. And here's these songs. The songs to me right now, like, I love the fact that you always have humor, which is not always in, well, it's not true. Like, Buddy Guy has probably got one of the most... they're all humorous, right? The guy, like, you know, Buddy Guy to me is one of my favorites in the blues world. But teacher, you know, here it is. Cute. You always add in a little humor. And folks that are following James on Facebook, there's every satire and wit and in your face that you want. I love following you on Facebook just because I'm like, uh-oh.
I do get a little wiggy.
But every, you know, you add some joy to, you know, you've got to be like, you bring in the joy too. It's not all.
Oh, good.
You know what I mean? You bring joy into every album you have has something lighthearted. Let me put it that way. Lighthearted.
I like. And they're the hardest songs to write. Humorous songs are very hard to write because they often aren't funny at all. You know, it's like you get to the end and go, you know.
Oh God,
that's okay.
Who wants to be a comedian? How hard is that?
Oh God, yeah.
Right.
But if you have the satire kind of personality and then you try to be funny with it, I mean, it's funnier. but not to everybody. But
but
I mean, that's what humans are. That's why we're human. Mm. We can look back and critique ourselves and either, you know, go down in the dumps with it or make fun of it. And I think we're, as humans, what brings us forward is the ability to look and laugh at ourselves.
Well, I have five or six teacher friends, and this is their favorite song.
Yeah, really, teacher. That's awesome. Well, because, crushes happen, right? I wonder about that. It's so interesting because it's about, it does prove that knowledge is power, right?
Yeah.
It does influence and affect. And I think when someone teaches you something, you feel something for that person that teaches you something, if it got through to you. And then, as you know, at those ages, it becomes a crush. But then how many college teachers end up with, you know, their students as a wife or a husband? So, the true thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
you know, love has no age boundaries, apparently.
No,
it doesn't.
Except by law.
I know.
And that's really funny,
that,
too.
Which is a good thing, too. I know. That today we're recording this on Roman Polanski's birthday. And I looked him up. I'm like, this name. I know Scandal happened. And don't put a quote out there about Roman Polanski through him.
No.
And I looked it up.
Ew.
I'm like, oh, that's why I don't want to. No. Bad boy.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like Jerry Lee Lewis, you know. Anyway, so.
No.
You know.
Stop it.
No. Sorry. But you got to watch out for your piano teacher.
So, I based the, you know, I do that song in a kind of high voice, and I based my performance off the Prince song Kiss. I kind of listened to what he did, influenced that. So
that's interesting.
Music reference.
What do you think about Prince as a guitar player?
Oh God, I'm a huge Prince fan. So
I would never know, but
anything. Yeah. I think he's great. He's an incredible guitarist, singer, writer, you name it. He was the tops in my book.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think I think a lot of people only looked at him as pop. You know what I mean? There was a pop culture in the 80s. But before that, too, he did jazz like nobody's business.
He did everything. Was great.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that you were into him, too, like that. Like he.
I've loved him for years. You know, that album, early one, the Dirty Minds one. You know, so again, that's got the whole sparse thing. It's like only two or three instruments on it and everything. You know, there's lots of air and space on that one. That's one of my favorite records of any time.
I think one of the times that people got him as a guitarist, like, I mean, the Purple Rain, obviously, and everything too, but like the general population is when he did the While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And then he brought in George Harrison's son. I just love how he looked at his son and like let the kid, like, this is for you and you can stand forward too.
It was this
connection of like bringing the youth out towards the platform. You know what I mean? He was just so sweet.
Oh, yeah.
He really, really, really was, you know. But that's a thing. It's like when we talk about blues, like I said, it's in all kinds of places that you don't think.
Everywhere in every corner of the world, there's a reason to sing the blues.
I still want to go back to I Killed the King of the Blues. I want to go back to this song because it's important. So there's the whole thing about the, you know, like Crossroads, Ry Cooder's album and that movie, Crossroads, right? So here, you know, here's the big duel off at the end, and it's the devil and Robert Johnson, the whole devil in the blues, like this whole thing. So apparently this is kind of part of that, right? But like, come on.
Well, the story of Robert Johnson is there's a few different theories of how he died, but one of the most prominent ones is that he was poisoned by a jealous husband in a bar. And so I was reading a book about Robert Johnson, and I suddenly had this whole idea of the writing the song from the husband's point of view, and sort of turning him into like a wandering Jew kind of character, who's haunted forever by his killing Robert Johnson. So that's where that came from.
With the Robert Johnson, did you see the Netflix thing? There was like a little documentary about him and doing that.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And yeah. I don't know if you've seen, but they used to only have two pictures of him, and they recently found a third one that they're pretty sure is him.
Oh, wow.
If you go online, wow, you can probably type like third Robert Johnson picture, and it's kind of exciting.
We've got this book, and please, I'm mad I don't have the guy's name. Chesper is the last name. I'm going to say Steve Chesper. He's a blues musician too. And he wrote the definitive guide of Mississippi blues artists. And you can take this book and go to every gravesite, every.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, we travel full time and we're in one car, you know, but this is one of those books that I will not like give away. It's in the car. And I want to go and do this. I have this feel. I want to do like the blues artist. So I'm just going to say, like, when we get out there, I'm going to call you.
Okay.
I think you
call
should
you
fly
from
in.
The gravesite.
I think you should fly in and like, or drive in and come out and meet us in like, you know, blues territory and be part
that
of this.
That sounds like such a good adventure. I can't believe it.
I think you should do it. And I think I've got a few other people I want to call in too that we have like a, that's just
graveyard.
Like a,
yeah,
it's
a
not
graveyard blues session.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
well, just, what a better place.
I know, walked, but there's, I mean, Mississippi is not that big of a state,
but
and we could do
walked,
it pretty. Yeah.
We've walked a lot of graveyards. And we've seen famous people's
a lot of
like graves. No, it's interesting because you walk from gravestone to gravestone and there'll be a famous person, especially if they're like from the 1700s or 1800s, with the smallest thing. And then you'll come to a big mausoleum of somebody who died more recently and they haven't done anything other than, oh, boy, I'm so good to get in trouble. I have money.
Oh,
no,
they got it
but
somehow.
You know what I mean? You don't.
Yeah.
It's like chalk and cheese. You're like, oh, here's this famous person next to you. Somebody that even reading what they were about doesn't.
Oh, you can't get into that, man.
I know.
You're going to get emails.
I'm going to get in trouble. But it's interesting, you know. And graveyards, I mean, yeah, a blues session in a graveyard. Whoa.
Dude, seriously. So when we get to Mississippi, I'm going to call you. Seriously. We'll organize it beforehand, obviously. But like,
what about
on
Halloween?
And then, then we'll have to play before I take my rest. And then we'll have to do it before we get to the graveyard.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Should be on Halloween, though. Yeah. Should be on Halloween.
So what are you working on now? Because I know you are. I mean, are you taking a break? Like, seriously?
Well, the weird thing about being such an indie like I am, you kind of have to keep things churning all the time, you know? I mean, if I know I'm relatively prolific compared to some people, but I usually have something churning. And it's funny you mentioned, because just literally yesterday, I was putting together a list of what I think the next album might be. And it's in line with redoing songs. There's a bunch of songs like on my Backwoods Glance album and several others that my blues audience has never heard. And so I'm thinking of doing an album where I just kind of revisit and rearrange and do these for a blues audience. So that's in the works right now.
Oh, there's some. I love Backwoods Glance. That's one of my favorite albums. It's one. It's seriously, really that and Pledge Drive, those two, and Evangeline. Now I'll just keep going on to all of them.
See, yeah,
yeah. That's because I'm thinking over the songs on the album. Like I listen to my and Hams and Ham and Eggs. We play that a lot on food shows, but now things have changed up a little bit. Now we get to play on song lists and everything, but. I you've got some songs that really just dig into the heartbeat of the country of people working hard and love and loss and blue collar life and below blue collar life, what it's like. And I really appreciate that because I think you're documenting history in a very cool way for people to get that, you know, to get it. And even, you know, this album, you wrote it during COVID. Did you think about it? Like, oh, this is COVID, you know, you've got a lot of death stuff in here.
Well, the final song is definitely, that one is definitely a COVID song. It's mm-hmm. interesting too. I have a Facebook friend from Tunisia named Houda Oesli. I'm probably mispronouncing it. And she has her artistic name is Rosa Rosita. Anyway, we've been corresponding for several years back and forth, and her father died this last year, although not of COVID. And so in one of our correspondences, it's interesting, she speaks five languages, so her English is pretty good, but sometimes a little weird. But she said, death doesn't ask permission. And I was like, okay.
That's perfect. That's a song right there. Yeah.
I was like, and literally, as they sometimes do, I read that and the whole song just wrote itself in my brain. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
What insight would you give to someone starting out in the music world now? I mean, you've been in this world for a long time with music and performing. Even in the videos on YouTube, you see you performing, you know, as a younger guy out there, and it's like hippie man, you know. But, you know, hey, you know, but think about it, you know, all the music that you've seen of your life and all the changes. And a lot of times, you know, you want to go this is the coolest thing to do. What would you say to someone starting out who really just loves music, writes good stuff, and should they veer towards what's cool now or veer for what's in their heart? What would you give advice?
What's in their heart? I mean, for me, it's only what's in their heart. You know, I've never tried to write to a time or a style or anything. You know, I used to do much more rock oriented music, but it still sounded like my stuff. You know, I'm just not the kind of writer I don't like corporate kind of music at all. You know, I don't like stuff that isn't straight from the heart. So definitely from the heart. I would also say you better just really love it. You know, if you're in it just to make money, then that's probably not the right business for you. You know, I mean, I've done it a long time. I have not really made any money, but I've gotten well known, you know, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
The artistic world is incredibly difficult, but it's a huge part of history, and it tells the truth about history more than politicians to say.
Yeah, well, that's for sure.
Don't start. But yeah, it does.
Politicians can't even get today right.
I know.
Don't start. Don't it's even like, start on it. Don't. We'll have a whole other hour. Like, no, I mean, we could go on for beyond an hour on that. I think music is our salvation, but it tells the truth. It tells the feeling of what's going on. It is like a documentarian of what's going on in the world and how everyone's feeling and what they need to feel and how they also need that release. And this album, I think it has that. I think this is cool, dude. I mean, we love all your music and it's all exciting. Yeah. And I'm like, he's got a new album. And it took us so long to get you on the show because we all stuff with computers. And so I really do. I want Death by Update as a song, please. I beg of you to write that. But we're going to close with Detour Blues because like Nancy, she started listening to the album and she was just like, Detour Blues.
Yeah.
She just starts yelling out, Detour Blues. And I'm like, okay, whatever mama wants. And it is, it's cool. And it really goes with, I think, our life too.
That traveling sums it up.
When you want to travel full time and COVID hits, our life was nothing but a series of
I can't imagine. No, I thought about you too. I thought, oh my God, what are you doing?
It's the detour.
You know how many times we'd end up at a rest area next to truckers looking at each other. Now what? Because things were closing down as we were traveling. We're being careful. We're vaccinated. We mask. We do all that stuff. But at that point, it was like, now what? And I would sit down under a gazebo with my computer and my phone. And Nancy would bring sandwiches out of the back of the car and sometimes wine. Don't tell anybody that, because she could see it was getting to that point. She's like, I think you need some wine. This is where your mother is really the best mother on the planet. Some people give you cookies. My mother brings me wine and sandwiches.
There you go.
And we got through. But Detour Blues is,
you know what? That's our bird song.
It's, that is where I can't wait to hear it. We're gonna, and this is just, you it allows you to move forward, and detours actually are a breath of fresh air.
They actually sometimes save your butt.
Yeah. And I think your Detour Blues encapsulated that part, that feeling of,
it's not bad.
No, I'm so glad to hear it. That's one of the songs I was the least sure of, but people seem to have been taking to it. Yeah.
Oh no, it's cool.
Leave it where it is. Don't you touch it. Don't you touch it. You leave it where it is. It's good. Don't you touch it. It's on the album now, so you can't touch it.
I like the instrumental on that too, with the double guitar and a harmonica. That was one of my favorite parts.
Oh, speaking of this, so you got, who's on the album with you? Give everybody a shout out, please.
Oh yeah, I could give a shout out. Peter Grinnell and Julie Moskowitz. Who are the regular bass and drummer for my performing band. And then they're on drum and bass. Julie's on drum and Peter's on bass. And then I play guitar and harmonica and sing.
Cool. Now, let's just, COVID be gone, right? We're back to 100% normal. I know people are out playing again a little bit. And it's going in and out. Like one thing's open and then all of a sudden it's closed. It's kind of up and down right now across the country and around the world. But now take this album. Where would you perform it in San Francisco with the band that you have and anybody you would want to bring on stage with you? Like who would you bring and where?
Oh, who would I bring? Oh,
Keep the band. I mean, you've got an awesome band.
I would bring Jeff Beck into any band I was ever in.
He's like, Jeff Beck is
If I had if I could play with any musician in the world, it would probably be Jeff Beck.
Hell yes, I'm with you. Oh my God, yes. And did you ever see him with Tal Wickenfold? Like, just like how he helped her? Like, just.
Okay,
I know. I'm sorry, but I really love Jeff Beck too. So where are you going to play?
Oh, well, we just play different clubs around here. You know, I can't think of a specific.
You want to do clubs. So more than like, you would do more of like a club thing.
Oh,
than
you're talking fantasy thing here.
Yeah.
Okay. I would want to do it then at the ballpark. You know, let's get the ballpark with Jeff Beck and Blind Lemon Pledge. I think that would work good.
You know what would be cool? If you could stop the traffic on all those bridges and those places where you have to cross over the water, all those different bridges, there's bridges on top of you. Just stop them all and perform there, and everybody stopped.
There you go.
Stop the Golden Gate Bridge, like he's in the middle of it.
Yeah,
and they can put big screens up so everyone can see it, and everything's playing on their phones and computers. Not their computer, but in their car,
Yeah, and watch, and then waitresses and roller. Oh, can you say wait? I don't know what you say anymore.
Servers.
People serve. Whatever, servers on roller skates would bring you drinks. Be fun.
And a burger.
I'm liking this fantasy.
This is a cool fantasy.
I'm just thinking it's fun.
Beats Blues at the Graveyard, I think.
I don't know, but I like Blues at the Graveyard, too. I still want someone to come in on roller skates to bring me food while you're in the graveyard. Why not? This is classic. No, listen, I'm calling you when we get to Mississippi and do this. We want to spend time, and like I want to dig up around the graves. That sounds so terrible. Want to go like get into the history of, you know, I think so many people are forgotten in the blues, the world of the blues, and I don't want them to be forgotten, and I want us to do something about it with what we do in our travels and our magazines and everything. And I want all my friends in the blues to be part of this, because you guys know more than we do. And I just feel like we could do something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I feel like even an album or something, I don't know. Just
that'd be cool.
Putting it out there in the world. But James, as always, thank you for joining us. Everyone, keep up with James. It's blindlemon-pledge.com. Pledge yourself. pledge yourself to the Blind Lemon. Go get it. And go to bigblendradio.com to keep up with our shows. We air Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we're going to close with Nancy's favorite, Detour Blues. Mm. Thanks so much, James.
Thanks, James.
Alrighty. Take care.
Detour Blues is driving me. Got the blues far as I can see. The Detour Blues, Lord, is driving me. More than a nickel, more than a dime. Takes much more for this squeeze of mine. More than a nickel, much more than a dime. I lost my direction and don't know which lane to choose. I motivate love highway, heading for the Detour Blues. Yeah, I'm heading for the Detour Blues. Detour Blues, I'm running low, running around where I've been before. Yeah, Detour Blues, Lord, I'm running low. Spinning my wheels, wasting my time, waiting for this fickle friend of mine. Spinning my wheels, Lord, I'm wasting my time. I've lost my direction, don't know which lane to choose. I'm motivating love highway, the Detour Blues. Ooh, heading for the Detour Blues. Detour Blues, ooh Lord, I am running low. Spinning my wheels, wasting my time, waiting for this fickle friend of mine. Spinning my wheels, Lord, I'm wasting my time. I lost my direction, I don't know which lane to choose. I motivate love highway, head for the Detour Blues. Ooh, I'm heading for the Detour Blues.